Ezra chapter 8, found on page 499 of your pew Bibles. Ezra chapter 8, beginning with verse 1. These are the heads of their fathers' houses, and this is the genealogy of those who went up with me from Babylonia in the reign of Artaxerxes the king. Of the sons of Phinehas, Gershom. Of the sons of Ithamar, Daniel. Of the sons of David, Hattush. Of the sons of Shechaniah, who was of the sons of Parash, Zechariah, with whom were registered 150 men. Of the sons of Pahath-Moab, Eliahonai, and the son of Zerahai, and with him 200 men. Of the sons of Zatu, Shechaniah, the son of Jahaziel, and with him 300 men. Of the sons of Adin, Ebed, the son of Jonathan, and with him 50 men. Of the sons of Elam, Jeshiah, and the son of Athaliah, and with him 70 men. Of the sons of Shephatiah, Zebediah, the son of Michael, and with him 80 men. Of the sons of Joab, Obadiah, the son of Jehiel, and with him 218 men. Of the sons of Bani, Shelemith, the son of Josephiah, and with him 160 men. Of the sons of Bebai, Zechariah, the son of Bebai, and with him 28 men. Of the sons of Azgad, Johanan, the son of Hakatan, and with him 110 men. Of the sons of Adonikam, those who came later, their names being Eliphelet, Jeuel, and Shemaiah, and with them 60 men. Of the sons of Bigvai, Uthai, and Zachar, and with them 70 men. I gathered them to the river that runs at Ahava, and there we camped 3 days. As I reviewed the people and the priests, I found there none of the sons of Levi. Then I sent for Eliezer, Ariel, Shemaiah, Elnathan, Jarib, Elnathan, Nathan, Zechariah, and Meshullam, leading men, and for Joiarib and Elnathan, who were men of insight. And I sent them to Iddo, the leading man at the place, Cassiphia, telling them what to say to Iddo and his brothers, and the temple servants at the place, Cassiphia, namely, to send us ministers for the house of our God. And by the good hand of our God on us, they brought us a man of discretion of the sons of Mali, the son of Levi, son of Israel, namely Sherebiah, with his sons and kinsmen 18, and Hashbiah, and with him Jeshiah, and of the sons of Merari, with his kinsmen and their sons 20, besides 220 of the temple servants whom David and his officials had set apart to attend the Levites. These were all mentioned by name. Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God, to seek from him a safe journey for ourselves, our children, and all our goods. For I was ashamed to ask the king for a band of soldiers and horsemen to protect us against the enemy on our way, since we had told the king that the hand of our God is for good on all who seek him, and the power of his wrath is against all who forsake him. So we fasted and implored our God for this, and he listened to our entreaty. Then I set apart 12 of the leading priests, Sherebiah, Hashbiah, and 10 of their kinsmen with them. And I weighed out to them the silver and the gold and the vessels, the offering for the house of our God, that the king and his counselors and his lords and all Israel there present had offered. I weighed out into their hand 650 talents of silver, and silver vessels worth 200 talents, and 100 talents of gold. 20 bowls of gold worth 1,000 derricks, and 2 vessels of fine bright bronze as precious as gold. And I said to them, "You are holy to the Lord, and the vessels are holy, and the silver and the gold are a freewill offering to the Lord, the God of your fathers. Guard them and keep them until you weigh them before the chief priests and the Levites and the heads of the fathers' houses in Israel at Jerusalem, within the chambers of the house of the Lord." So the priests and the Levites took over the weight of the silver and the gold and the vessels to bring them to Jerusalem, to the house of our God. Then we departed from the river Ahava on the 12th day of the first month to go to Jerusalem. The hand of our God was on us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and from ambushes by the way. We came to Jerusalem, and there we remained 3 days. On the 4th day, within the house of our God, the silver and the gold and the vessels were weighed into the hands of Meremoth the priest, son of Uriah, and with him was Eleazar the son of Phinehas, and with them were the Levites, Jozabad the son of Jeshua, and Noadiah the son of Binui. The whole was counted and weighed, and the weight of everything was recorded. At that time, those who had come from captivity, the returned exiles, offered burnt offering to the God of Israel, 12 bulls for all Israel, 96 rams, 77 lambs, and as a sin offering, 12 male goats. All this was a burnt offering to the Lord. They also delivered the king's commissions to the king's satraps and to the governors of the province beyond the river, and they aided the people and the house of God. Well, last week we looked at the letter that had accompanied Ezra, given to him by Artaxerxes, the king, to guide him in his journey and to ensure that what he had been tasked to do would be accomplished, that he wouldn't be beset by those beyond the river, those residing in the province beyond the river who had been thus far a great thorn in the side to the people of God, seeking at every turn to diminish their effectiveness, to lead them astray, or even to see them abandon the right worship of God. But here, as we are looking now at the second volley of exiles to return from Babylonia, again, we're reminded that this is some 80 years after the first of the exiles returned from Babylonia. In that time, the temple had been rebuilt. And yet here, 80 years later, there is still a need in Jerusalem. As we know here, there are some that didn't go when Cyrus had opened the doors for all those who wished to return to Jerusalem to help to rebuild that temple. It's possible that some families were split up so that those who were too old to make the journey or infirm might be cared for so that the others could make their journey. But for whatever the reasons, we have now 80 years later the preparations being made by the servant of God, Ezra, one who was well versed in the law of God, one who was tasked even by Artaxerxes with that important task of teaching the people to ensure that the law of God was known and was applied throughout the inhabitants of Judah, throughout the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Ezra was to return, and there he was to establish magistrates and judges who were knowledgeable in the law, who were governed by it, who would rule according to it, all to the glory of God and to the good of his people. Well, this doesn't happen easily. Such things take much planning. And if there's one thing that can be said about Ezra,
He was a planner. He liked to make sure that things were in order. And for those of you that may have just a touch of OCD, you'll be thankful to know that's not a disqualifying trait. It has its place. And here we see Ezra, one tasked by God with a task that was enormous, taking time before he sets out on this journey to review those who assembled themselves to go. And we see here that when Ezra was given this task, he didn't take it lightly. He didn't take it only upon himself. But from the very outset, Ezra reaches out to the heads of the families. And many of these families that are listed here are the same families that were mentioned in that earlier group of exiles. These are the same clans. These are descendants who give themselves to this task this time to return some 80 years later. As God was pleased in the first group of exiles to ensure that there were those of the line of Aaron that could serve as priests, and there were those of the house of Levi that would serve as Levites, and there were those that represented the house of David. So we see in our passage this evening that those families are represented again, eventually. At the outset, we see as these were assembled along the river in Ahava, there were some that were missing. As Ezra examines all of those who gather, he notes that there are a group that are not represented. There's no one there from the house of Levi. There are no deacons. There are none of those that can be about the daily workings of the temple. And that causes a lot of scholars to wonder why. For what reason were the Levites not present as this new call went forth for God's people to return? Some would argue that the idea of returning to those functions within the temple wasn't glamorous enough, that they found more fulfillment in the things that they were presently doing and what they had established themselves to do there in Babylonia, that they didn't want to return. That's one way that we could look at their absence. Although when they are later called upon, they do respond. It is also likely that over the course of all of these years, there would have been established in that place called Cassiphia some synagogue, some place where the law of God was being taught and where those Levites were themselves both being trained and exercising in different ways than what they would have been accustomed to within the temple. But they could have thought that their work was demanding and needed. Perhaps they too were looking after those who were infirm and caring for those whose needs were too great for those who had remained behind. And yet, when Ezra makes this discovery, we see again how Ezra calls upon the fathers of the household, calls upon the elders, thinks of those who might aid him in making a plea to those Levites that they might come. We see that this gathering, this assembly or community in Cassiphia was well known, such that Ezra knew precisely where to go and who to seek out, who they were to go and make a compelling argument. They were to approach a man by the name of Iddo, a leading man in that place, Cassiphia, and telling them what they ought to say to Iddo and his brothers and the temple servants at the place, Cassiphia, namely, to send us ministers for the house of our God, in verse 17. What else do we note about Ezra? Ezra is anything but proud. Ezra is one who quickly acknowledges who it is that gives every victory along the way, who it is that ultimately brings about that desired end. He attributes the successes of those emissaries that were sent to Edo not upon their persuasive speech, not upon the pressure that they put upon the Levites to answer their call, but upon the good hand of our God being upon them. And this is a repeated theme with Ezra. This is something that we see throughout his ministry as something that he continually sees rather than his own abilities or his own accomplishments, that which God is pleased to accomplish even through him or through his people. And so we find in verse 18 this attribution of success to the good hand of our God being upon us. They brought to us a man of discretion, the son of Mahli, the son of Levi, son of Israel, namely Sherebiah, with his sons and kinsmen. And we see that besides these, their numbers grow quite a bit, with over 220 coming out to labor, to answer this call of Ezra and these elders of the families. And yet, though this has been now accomplished, Ezra's not yet ready to go. Ezra says he assembles all of this group for 3 days along the river. This is a group numbering someplace close to 5,000 people that have answered the call, have taken the invitation of Artaxerxes to return. And you can imagine, as they think in terms of returning to Jerusalem in what would prove to be some of the hottest and most hostile and difficult times to travel those many miles, they were raring to go. They wanted to go now and get ahead of the heat. And yet Ezra pauses at the riverside for 3 days. 3 days so that he can do that important work of examining those who had assembled, of assessing their readiness to go, of looking at all of the things that they had packed away to bring to ensure that they may be able to make that journey safely and intact. But again, he doesn't rest entirely upon his ability to build lists. He doesn't trust entirely upon his ability to judge rightly. But we see that while they are assembled along that river, he calls upon the people of God to enter into a season of prayer and fasting. Ezra realized that no amount of planning, no extensive construction of lists would be sufficient to ensure their safety and security upon this journey back to Jerusalem. This was a roadway that was known to be littered with bandits, and especially those who would be quite attracted to a large assembly carrying tons of silver and gold and polished bronze back to Jerusalem. And so Ezra knows that this great undertaking would need to be bathed in prayer. And so they did. They engaged in great seasons of prayer in anticipation of this, calling upon their God, perhaps themselves even recalling the psalms that we have read and sung this evening, which remind us of that one who is our refuge, that one who is our deliverer, that one who is our defender, and calling upon him to bless them in this journey. We see that they engage in fasting. This too is an art that has been largely ignored by the New Testament church. And yet it's interesting, if you do a study of the New Testament, you'll see that Christ speaks more about fasting in the New Testament than he does baptism and other aspects of church life. Repeatedly, he speaks in terms of fasting as an activity of his people. What is the point of fasting? Is it that we may boast about what it is that we are denying ourselves? Not at all. But it is to help to focus us in a season of prayer, that we might give our full attention to that one whom we are seeking in prayer, and that we delight to hear from, as he would be pleased to answer our prayers and guide us in those things in which we would undertake. And so he says in verse 21, "Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God and seek from him a safe journey for ourselves, our children, and all our goods." Then it's interesting, Ezra goes on to explain why it was that they were asking God in this particular way for safety. That he had elected not to ask Artaxerxes to send troops and horsemen to guard them on their journey. It's as if this one knowledgeable in the law of God wanted to impress upon Artaxerxes the capabilities of the God of Judah, that he would protect his people. Now it's interesting, it's likely that Ezra wrote both Ezra and Nehemiah. And in both of those books, likely penned by his hand, Ezra chooses not to ask Artaxerxes for accompaniment of military personnel, but Nehemiah does. And we don't find anywhere between Ezra and Nehemiah anything that would pit these two against the actions that they took. Neither one of those were wrong, but it's interesting that we see both of them in expression within these two books having to do with the reestablishment of God's people. It's likely that Artaxerxes would have gladly sent troops along, expecting that this ragtag bunch of some 5,000 men, women, and children, young and old, burdened with tons of riches, would be easy prey. And yet, Ezra calls upon God, and the people assembled around the river Ahava call upon God in prayer and fasting, that he would deliver them. Clearly, it is in the mind of Ezra that this was a potentially dangerous journey. And as I read through this chapter, I was kind of, again, surprised that we don't read extensive notes about those months that they were on the trail. When we think in terms of missionary biographies, we often enjoy reading about the day-to-day lives, the difficulties faced, and the ways in which the Lord overcomes those difficulties at various places along the path. But there's none of that to be found here in this account, an account that covered these many months of their return. But all we read from Ezra is that God's hand was upon us and we arrived. You see, for Ezra, that was far more important than outlining all of the different encounters that they may have experienced on the trail. That was far more important that you and I would realize the faithfulness of God as it was demonstrated in a very practical way in the lives of those exiles returning to Jerusalem. He did it. He saw them safely back. And we know that they made it safely without significant instances, without the bandits being at all successful in trying to steal from them, because we have here at the end of their journey their accounting for all that had been given to them, all of those things of silver and of gold and of bronze being weighed out before the priests and left within the chambers of the temple. A testimony that God had heard their prayers and our God had faithfully upheld them in their journey, seeing them safely home, even in the midst of the harsh desert. We see in this that the efforts of this great planner, this one who was skilled in lists, and we see this throughout the book of Ezra as we see the names of those who return, the genealogy, the numbers of the families, the amounts of gold and silver that were returned, all of these things attest to his attention to detail. And yet, we see that through it all, Ezra wants us to have our focus upon God's good hand. God safely saw them to their home. God's good hand overcame every obstacle that arose, first with the Levites who were needed and those temple servants, but also in seeing them safely return to Jerusalem with all that had been given, that right worship of God might be continued within the temple that had been rebuilt, where God's word would be taught, and where the people would be instructed in the law that they might walk in obedience in the ways of God. And so we have an encouragement for us as we see here the faithfulness of God on display. We've been reminded of the necessity to engage in prayer. Too often we first turn to our own abilities, our own wisdom, our own strength in those tasks that are before us. And yet we see in the example of Ezra, prayer came before the undertaking. Reliance upon God is necessary. And it serves as a good reminder for you and I as we go about our days that we are to be men, women, and children of prayer, seeking His guidance, His help, His deliverance, day by day, through the days that He's allotted to us, that we might accomplish all that He has given us to do. Let's look to the Lord in prayer.